Welcome to Agency's Dirty Little Secret, our series of events focusing on common problems faced by agency leaders and founders. This week we talked about overservicing clients. Dirty, yes. Secret, probably not. In this discussion with agency leaders, we talked about what we recognise overservicing is, why we do it, and what we can do to stop it. I hope you enjoy it. So this is, I called this the agency's dirty little secret. I mean, it's not a secret. It's what most agencies do most of the time. One way or another, we end up over-servicing clients. And if you think about the profit of an agency, you know, I don't know, classic figures are 60% staff costs, 20% overhead, 20% profit in an agency. The reality, I think the average at the moment is something like 12 to 15% if you're doing is considered reasonably healthy in terms of profit. But if you overservice your clients, if you spend 10% or 15 or 20% longer doing everything than you should, then that's just that margin, that profitability just starts to erode away. So it is a dirty little secret. And to some extent, we all do it to a greater or lesser degree. And that's, I guess why you're here today. Is it going to let me move forward? It is. So I'm just going to talk briefly and then open it up to the floor. But what do we mean by overservicing? What I mean is providing more hours to client than you had agreed or had planned to do. Or another way of looking at it might be you've got an excess of unbillable hours, so client unbillable hours, where you're spending time on a client but not charging them for it. And another clue might be that you're providing work or services or support or anything with your clients, but at discounted prices, or even at discounted prices that the client doesn't know are discounted, or worse, potentially for free. And there are always good reasons for doing things for nothing. But if you're doing it deliberately, that's great. If you're just doing it generally, giving stuff away in the hope of being loved, then that's unhelpful. Okay. So we're going to talk about why we do it and what it looks like. We're going to talk about one classic example. Hopefully we can all chip in and have a little conversation about that. How you can deal with it, and obviously why we do it and how you deal with it are clearly very, very closely related. And then ways to frame the conversation and have a discussion about it. So why do we overservice our clients? There are a lot of reasons, and I'm just going to skim through them quickly. So we overpromise. I mean, everyone's done this in the pitch or during the commercial stage of a pitch where the client goes, oh, but I need this. I need some extra stuff. I need some extra reports. I need something else. And in that sort of desperate desire to be loved, we go, yeah, okay, we'll include that. We'll roll that in. So all of our careful planning around the resourcing required to deliver a job, we then go to the client, yeah, we'll give you anything. Please just love us. Under budgeting. So quite often we're not doing the careful planning and the budgeting of the time. Actually, we are miscalculating the time and resources that it would take during scoping. And then what we're committing to doing is more work than we actually had anticipated. And there's lots of reasons for that, but under budgeting or under allowing for the work that we're doing can result in over-servicing, of course. This is a huge list. And this is why, I mean, it's not surprising, there's a lot of reasons for it, but this is why it goes on. Clients go feral. I'm not a huge fan of the expression all buyers are liars, but it does sum up some clients. They kind of will push the boundaries and try and get as much as they can. They will squeeze what they can out of the relationship if it's not a partnership, and all agencies talk about partnership, but almost no clients do. Then they're exploiting that to their advantage, or what they see to be their advantage. I mean, the ironic thing is, I think if they genuinely, some more clients came to it as a relationship, then they'd get far, far more out of the agency than they do. But that's what we see. Poor client management. So, and this isn't having a go at agency people, but, you know, a lack of training in your team, a lack of training of the client, not setting boundaries, and not anticipating the sort of behavior that might happen, trying to retrofit rules in which no one wants to discuss, and then they won't follow those rules anyway. So, you know, the classic one there might be for amends. We're going to charge you for amends. And then the client team go, well, we don't really want to charge for those amends because, you know, if we ask them for more money, they're going to hate us. That, if you came to the last talk, you remember the Oliver principle, which is if you ask clients for more money, you'll end up living under a bridge in destitution and begging for cigarette butts. Different story. Over-demanding clients. So rather than clients who are just sort of going feral and wanting everything, you've got clients who just expect more and more and more. And that's a ratchet. So that never stops. So that only ever goes up. And then what you allow is the bar to get a bit higher. That's the new ground zero. They ratchet up again. 6 months down the line, you discover you've got a client you can't make any profit on. And you're stuck in an unhealthy relationship. There's more than that. So the perceived importance of a client, why might you be over-servicing a client? Because it's our biggest client, it's our most important client. Recently talking to an agency owner about their largest client, and they'd got themselves into a proper pickle about this client. It was incredibly unprofitable. And then the client sacked them. And the client sacked them because they felt they weren't getting the service they wanted. And there was a massive disconnect between what the agency thought they were doing and what the client thought they were getting. And as it transpired, it was the best thing that could have happened. It was maybe 25% of their revenue, which is horrific to lose, but they were making no money on it. So suddenly you take away 25% of all of your effort. You go, do we need all those people? Are we doing things sensibly? Can we impact our processes? What can we be doing? The profitability went up. I mean, so it can be seen as a good thing, but the perceived importance of clients can lead you to, we used to have a very large client at Agenda 21, and I used to, when the account team would come in, I called it top trumping. Martha will remember this. And they go, yeah, but this is this client. It's the biggest client in the agency. Therefore, they get what they want. That's a real, real clue that things are going wrong. And the point is, actually, these clients are often legacy clients, and they're less profitable than you might think. Fragile client relationships. So quite often, this is the sort of needy, love me type of response. If you've got a client you perceive to be important and you feel you've got a fragile relationship with them, you know, if we push back, if we're firm with them, they might break up with us. Then you can find you start to do more and more in the need, in the sort of expectation that's going to make them love you more. The reality is it won't. There's something underpinning that which you need to fix. We all know that, but we rather not think about it generally. So, and this is an enormous list of reasons why we overservice clients, but a legitimate one, I think. So a more simple, more boring one is lack of process. So not tracking, not measuring, not reporting the right things. You can simply be overservicing because you're not actually monitoring properly and not tracking what you're doing. So you might think you've got a profitable client, but you don't. And then an unwillingness to change. I've heard this one a few times, which is where people go, well, that's the kind of agency we are. We service clients to the max and they love us for it. And our reputation's built around that. You're a doormat if that's what you're doing. So, but there's an unwillingness to recognize that this is actually not good behavior and it doesn't suit anybody. I'll come on to that in a second. And then not valuing what you do. So you can end up over-servicing clients. This goes a little bit back to the pricing conversation we had a month ago, which is if you don't value what you do properly, if you don't put the right pricing on it, then the client certainly won't value it and the client won't pay for it. And you'll end up rolling that into your program, which is undervaluing what you do, which means you may not be directly over-servicing, but you're creating less profit than you should, which then can manifest in some of the other things we've spoken about. And then not recognizing what you do. So not only not valuing what you do, but not recognizing what you do as being services. So for example, in client services, conversation I have all the time, in client services, we talk about, well, we can't charge for account management. Damn right, account management is milking the cow. That's an account which creates profit. And if I'm a client, I'm not going to pay you to get more money out of me. Whereas if you actually said, well, what do we mean by account management? We mean project management. We mean reporting, we mean strategy and planning. I mean, there's so many components to account management that if you actually break them down and said, well, you know, let's recognize things, these things for what they are. And if we're going to do project management for the client, then we should be charging for it. Quite easily, it's quite easy if you call it account management just to not charge for it. And typically you see over-servicing happening in account management more than anywhere else because, well, I'm just here to look after the client. That's my job. That's utter bullshit and I don't buy it. Swear alert. And then you can have bad or outdated service level agreements, and you can have a scope of works which just leaves so much wiggle room that there's a gap between the expectation of the two sides, which almost invariably means the client gets more than you wanted them to get in terms of resourcing. So you can see there's this enormous number of reasons. And if nothing else, I'll share the doc afterwards if anyone wants it. Well, I'll share it anyway, then you can pretend you wanted it. But if you just took this checklist of the reasons why it happens and applied it as a filter to everything that you do, you'll suddenly find that you'll start spotting over-servicing all over the place, or potential for over-servicing all over the place. So I think even just this list is something we're thinking about, and I'm sure when we talk there'll be more to add to it as well. So the funny thing about over-servicing is that eventually everybody loses. So, you know, as I gave you that example of the client that left because they felt they didn't get the service they wanted. And there might have been lots of little micro clues coming through from the agency about their frustration about over-servicing, which then draws the client's attention to the servicing of the issue, which you might be giving them masses of support in five areas, but where the client really wants the support is in five different areas. That's that sort of not understanding what the client's drivers are, what keeps them awake at night, and those things. You know, the classic one, the absolute favorite, particularly if you're working with retailers, is reporting. So back in the day at Summit Media, we were an e-commerce agency. We used to supply our client reports on Sunday evening or Sunday afternoon so that our clients would go into their trading meeting on Monday morning having got the data and had time to read it and do something with it before they sat in front of the commercial director or the chief exec and talked about trading for the previous week. But if you don't recognize that as critically important to all people who are involved in retailing, then you might think the most important thing is, well, the report was 20 minutes late on Monday morning, but we added three more reports in there, or we made it look prettier. You think you're doing an amazing job with the report. The fact that it's 20 minutes late means this poor person has gone into their meeting with no data. So that, you know, you get frustrated. The point I'm making here is that you get frustrated with the client gets frustrated with you, and eventually you're going to have a falling out. So it never actually pays to over-service clients. It pays to train your clients, and we'll talk about that in a second. I've left the building. So I thought it was worth talking about one example, just a little bit of, just to explore it a bit. There's obviously, you know, there's 1,000 examples that I've spoken that I'm going to unshare. But scope creep. Scope creep is, we've got something going on in chat. What's happening here? Okay. Scope creep is a classic over-servicing challenge. Has anyone experienced it? I mean, you must have experienced it, but what experience have you had of it, and what do you think the impact has been on the business? Gemma?
It's a huge problem for us, and I think often it's in those latter stages of the project. So, you know, like you say, we come up with a proposal, we put the statement of work together. We used to try and be quite specific at the start, but you just don't know till you really get into things and you start developing, you know, what's really required. But the places where we've really fallen down is not properly going, you know, leaving things a bit loose for the later stages and coming back and reviewing when we knew more, and then putting in more detail and you know, like talking to the client about that, that's the way that we're going to work. So, you know, for example, thinking that some brand we're going to create only needs a few assets and a quite simple, I don't know, set of brand guidelines. But actually, as you get into it, there's a lot more that's needed, but you feel like you're signed up to doing this certain thing, where actually, if you'd had those conversations, you could have been much more accurate. So we've changed it by, kind of just talking all the way through and saying we can't fully tell you, you know, what this end output and cost is going to be until we work through things. And that is working better, but it's so easy that it you know, you end up doing so much more than you thought you would.
Has anyone else experienced that? That situation where you don't really know what it's at the start, you don't really know what it's going to be?
I think on the larger projects, it's almost inevitable that the scope changes at some point, you know, to some degree, sometimes bigger than others. And I know that the one thing, the way that we've tried to address that is to have more regular catch-up meetings so that when they start to discuss these tangents that inevitably clients go off on. You know, somebody's mentioned something, they bring it to the next meeting, and to them it's, actually it would be nice if. Now, of course, everything's nice, but to get something else nice on top of what the original statement of work dictated means more of our time. So we're trying to address that from the client services side by giving them the authority, and the allowing them to dictate the terms of that with the client directly. You know, somebody says, oh, I need another 5 assets. You know, so rather than just go, okay, it's up to the client services team to say, okay, so for 5 assets, what I do, let me readdress the situation, boom, 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 and we'll revise a price and go back. And ultimately, you know, to me, and I'm sure for everybody else here, you know, if you go into a shop and buy something and then pop back in and say, actually, that was really good, I'm on another bag of those apples and some more of those oranges, you know, the greengrocer isn't going to go, okay, have them then. I mean, if you want more, you pay more. We all know that. That's how the real world works. And we're really trying to get our heads around the idea that actually we are people-to-people business. And when you speak to people, just be honest with them. Be professional, but be honest and say, that's fine, we can do more, but it's going to cost more. If they're not happy with that, you're possibly speaking to the wrong type of people.
I'm just trying to get my head around you going and buying oranges. I'm pretty sure there'd be wagon wheels in a real life example. Let's be honest.
That's one of your failures.
Probably me. What's interesting about what you both said is that it just seems so easy, doesn't it? It's so easy. Well, you know, we say at the beginning of the conversation that, you know, things will change. We've empowered our people to have the conversation with the client, and we just have the conversation with the client. The client goes, oh, you're right, I'm asking for more apples and oranges. How much cash do you want? Why don't we do it then? If it seems that easy, why do you find, anyone, Joe, what do you find you're doing?
I mean, I think we sort of differ slightly because obviously we're working less on a project basis. And I think, so there's a less sort of defined either delivery or period of time or whatever it is. So we're kind of working with clients on an ongoing basis. And I think just things kind of get added in. But equally, we created a sort of rod for our own backs. So we're trying to diversify what we do. We're trying to add more, you know, be it more platforms or more channels or whatever it is. And often you're like, well, we kind of need you to do this more than, you know, we need the client to do it more than the client does sometimes. So again, I think just sort of layering some of that stuff in is beneficial to us, and how we kind of deal with that, you know, again, that probably goes back to sort of commercial structuring at the start and making sure that's correct. But equally, you know, these can be relationships that are 2, 3, 4 years, you know, we've got some really long relationships with our clients. So how do you kind of ensure that you've sorted that out at the start, you know, not knowing how long a relationship is going to be? I think that's definitely a challenge for us, and how these things just kind of end up getting layered in. But there is some benefit to us a lot of the time as well. But
so I think you've inadvertently nailed another one of the reasons we get scope creep, which is we convince ourselves there's some product development value, or there's some, you know, we're adding new services, so we'll sell them cheaply to clients so that we can get some case studies.
Yeah.
If you're going to do that, that's great. But put a number on it. What's the actual value to your business of that? What are you prepared to sacrifice for it? What point does the client know you're discounting it or not?
Yeah.
And how long are they going to get that discount for? Yeah. whilst it's beneficial? And by the way, in return for that, are they giving you systematic feedback? Are they giving you anything that gives you more value than simply just being a client for it? And I know sometimes we don't want to tell clients that they're our guinea pig, but I think it's about being deliberate about that as well. But it is another reason we start to overservice. The 4-year thing, you know, the long relationship thing, I think to a great extent that's about resetting relationships, making sure you're systematically going back in and going, right, what's worked really well previously, what are we going to be looking at going forwards, and both sides genuinely having a conversation, you know, particularly in projects that never end, like a paid search retainer client where it just goes on and on and on, you can just end up getting very out of shape, and what you started off supplying, it ends up being something altogether different.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm going to scoot on and do a couple more things, and then we'll carry on with the chat, if that's okay. Well, I'm going to do it anyway. So where are we? Here we go. Thank you. So I bore on about this, I know, but on time, on brief, on budget is kind of the client service remit. Are we delivering stuff on time? Are we delivering what we said we were going to do? Are we doing it on budget? I think there's a value in holding that in two directions. So hold our clients to that as well. And that's about the quality of the conversations we have at the start. So how do you deal with overservicing? There's nothing clever here. This is effectively the sort of stuff we're just talking about, but recognizing the value of what you do and valuing it and charging it to clients accordingly, I think is important. Track your time. I still talk to agencies that either don't track their time. That's not in our culture. You think, God above, seriously, that's what you're going to live with that. And if you are tracking your time, you know, report it properly. And if you're reporting it properly, really make sure you're getting down to the granular level. So I've got one client where they now look at time spent by client, time spent by team by client, time spent by client services by team by client. They break it down and they really, really look for everywhere where they are effectively working unprofitably, where they're giving far too much to the client. And I'll happily, I can't share their reporting, but happily sort of talk through that in more detail at another time if anyone wants to talk about it. But it just threw the light on some of the industry beliefs or their agency beliefs about what was going on and the reality of what was going on when they got quite granular about it. So track your time and do something with it, I would say. Better SLAs, better scope of work. And by that, I don't just mean to Gemma's point about, well, we didn't know everything that was going to come. You do know that. You know that you don't know everything. So I think a better SLA or a better scope of work is one where you build that into the client arrangement, where you recognize that as you do something, you get a month in or a quarter in or a year in, you're going to know more about how it works and build those into your SLAs and build them into your scopes so that you have a recognized moment where you can reconsider and recalibrate your client relationships and stick to them. Get into the habit of sticking to them as well. Keep expectations in check. It's so easy to say and so hard to do. Like in any relationship, you just kind of, you know, often just want the other people to be happy. But in the end, it's drawn down at someone's cost. You know, if you're expending energy to make them happy, it's being drawn down at your cost. So keep expectations in check, which means talking all the time, the sort of thing Steve was talking about. Manage your clients, do the staff training. The number of people in agencies who are expected to manage a client that don't do client service training. So the sort of stuff that Martha does. So Martha was a client service, an ops person who now trains client service teams who's on this call. But you know, that idea of actually specifically giving people the commercial understanding about how business works, how you do your time. Don't just get them to do the timesheet, but get them to understand, share your data with them, share the reports with them, get them to understand how agencies make money. And don't turn them into selling machines. It's still in service of the client, but the lack of training in staff teams. And I think Abby used Lisa to do some training with her team at Born Social. Do you want to? I don't know if you want to mention anything about that, but it had an enormous impact on your business.
Yeah, it was Yeah, it was huge for us. Sorry, I am here. My internet's, I'm having some electrician work done. So camera off. She came in and we did 2.5 full days with a team of account directors, and then did a 3-month gap and then did another 2 days. It was really, really impactful, kind of started from basics of like account planning, account management, commercial management of clients. And I think it was a really good reset for us to have some external training rather than trying to just take framework and reapply it, and gave them, I guess, the autonomy to then lead with. So yeah, it was definitely focused around account development as much as it was client management, but I guess went through the process of saying, you know, unhappy clients don't grow, so you need to get them to the point where they're happy in the first place, one of which is setting expectations, delivering on scope, etc., before you can get to the development piece. That was really valuable for us, for sure.
Brilliant. And sorry to hijack you with that, but thank you for sharing it. And I think actually the broadest point here then is that we can actually get better at client services, we can get better at relationships and client relationships. You genuinely can get to a point where you can share openly with clients and have those conversations. It doesn't take very much to get to that point, I think. And I mean, Abby's at Born Social, and that's an agency that was growing really well, being very successful. So even if you're doing it really well, there's some value in, I think, getting stepping outside of the day-to-day and just going, what are we doing? What could we improve? Do we need some help to do that? I think there's real value in that. So training, quickly get back to, I'll wrap this up because we're going to run out of time. I'm so crap at this. What an old man. Can you see that's the over-servicing screen
now?
Yeah. Great. So I'm better than I thought. Okay, track your time, better scopes, keep expectations in check, management, training, and so on, pushback, anticipate the extras and provide costs in SLAs. This is really hard to do, but trying, you know, you run an agency, all of you run successful businesses, and you've seen this many, many times, and we've just spoken about it, which is, well, how do we actually charge our clients for these things? You can anticipate an awful lot of what's coming and you build that into the program. And the number of times you'll say to a client, yeah, we're happy to do that, but you know, we're going to need to find an extra £500 for that. And they go, oh yeah, I've forgotten. Actually, tell you what, let's not bother. Amazing how often clients do that. So just getting into the habit of pushing back and making sure that you stick to your own rules makes such a difference. It's about training. It's kind of like puppy. I've never had a puppy, but I understand that, you know, if a puppy runs amok in your house and literally, then you let it know that that's a bad thing to do. And if you do that 3 or 4 times, it learns and it goes outside. Well, I think clients are much the same. And I've just realized we're recording this. So apologies to all clients, but you are like puppies. And then redefining services is just going back to the thing about what you value. It's slightly off over servicing, but I think it feeds and relates to it, which is redefining your services so that you can attribute value to all of them. So that client service example I gave, I think that's really important. And then not only tracking and reporting everything by client, by team, by service, but, you know, looking at every direction, but using those levers as well. So actually not just tracking it, but then doing something about it and looking at what that information is telling you. So track everything you can. So I knew I'd go on too long. We've got about 10, 15 minutes left. Stop sharing, Andy. What... Is there anyone who feels they are finding some solutions to over-servicing? I'm not going to say has anyone cracked it, but has anyone got solutions? David, you've been quietly in the background, but you've got a lot of experience in this space. What do you do to address it?
Well, I think it's very, very difficult because... One client we had, we thought we'd cracked it because we had a total menu of all our services, and we were making shed loads of money. So because we had everything defined, But the trouble was, it was all about doing stuff rather than the creative stuff that we could do and the thinking, the planning. And that was very hard to get them to pay for that. And in the end, we tried to go to, you know, a fee-based system, but they just didn't want it. They just wanted to pay for widgets.
Well, you trained them to pay for widgets, hadn't you?
No. We hadn't trained that. We came into that. We didn't want to charge by widgets, but they did, and we made loads of money out of it. But in the end, I was saying, we're charging you too much for the stuff and not enough for what we actually do. So I think it's very, very difficult. I have clients now that, I do over service, and it's very, very hard to get out of that.
There's so many reasons why we do it. It isn't easy. If you could crack it, we wouldn't even be having a conversation.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that. I think there's a couple of points to pick out of that. One is legacy. So existing clients, it's very, very hard to change your behaviours with existing clients. Well, it's not hard. It's harder than setting this up from scratch with new clients and teaching them the way that you want to work with them. But I still think you can do it. I think you can go back and have those conversations. And one of the ways to do that is to think about your service proposition. So what you've just described is the it was Results International set up this model where they talked about do for me activities that just do for me stuff, pilot high, sell it cheap, think for me, help me think and think for me. And this is a continuum where one end of there is the think for me consulting type high value $5,000 a day stuff. And at the other end is the do for me, which is the, you know, just churning through PPC, selling bits of content by the yard. Sorry for everyone who doesn't know what a yard is. It's what we used to call a meter in the old days. Pilot high. And then in the middle, there's something which is sort of help me think, which is not quite KPMG strategy thinking, but it's what we might call strategy. It's the planning, the thinking, the creativity. And it is a continuum. And I think if you think about your services, the tendency is to give away some of the really valuable stuff. So we're straying slightly off over-servicing into pricing, but to give away that really valuable stuff or to undervalue that in order to keep the do-for-me stuff. And the do-for-me stuff is what ultimately the clients can churn anyone in and out. Any agency can end up doing that. If it's, you know, PPC, if it's copywriting, if it's animations, you know, you're down in the dirt competing with other people for that stuff. So I think if you can think about every component of what you provide a client, it gives you more chance of maybe even just having a hybrid charging model in your case there, David, which is, you know, we're doing the do for me stuff for you, which we recognize, but every quarter we're going to have a planning meeting or a strategy meeting where we help you actually at a business level, perhaps, and we charge a fee for that. So I think thinking about where your service proposition sits along this continuum is really important. Yeah. And it can change, certainly for new clients, it can change the way you think about how that operates. So there's something in there. But going back to legacy clients, I still think you can retrain, you know, you can I was thinking about pushing the dog analogy here, like with a rescue dog, but it sort of failed on its own. I'm not even going to go there. It's not a good one. But I think you can, this is why I call my newsletter Rambling On. This happens, you know this. Apologies to everybody. I think it's, you can change your relationship with existing clients. It is just harder and it's more nuanced, because if you just suddenly come in and go, actually, no, we're not doing that anymore. We've been giving that to you for free. You haven't been paying for it for 3 years. And now we're going to charge you for it. Well, I'd turn around as a client and go, well, that's tough. That's, you know, that's what I think the services you provide me, I expect that to be included. Why would I pay you more? So it's really nuanced conversation about going, well, why have we been doing that? Is there real value to the client? How do we talk about that? How do we communicate it and label it and then start to have that conversation? And the point about Joe's long relationships, I think, is if you have those factored resets in, the recalibrations in long relationships, then you have permission to go back, and both sides of the relationship can talk about what's worked, what hasn't, what can we do more of, what should we do less of, what can we change? And that breeds a way of thinking and communicating which actually feeds on itself. So it's equally positive as it is negative if you're not doing it.
I was going to say on that, one of the things that helped was, I don't know if you've shared that, I actually think it was from you guys, that this like plotting clients on that quadrant, which is who are the ones that sit in that up or out sector, and then I guess dedicating some leadership time into figuring out like how do we get them to have that conversation. But we're similar to you, Joe, in that a lot of it is retainer. We've got a lot of legacy clients who are, you know, on very old rate cards who we've just kind of tiptoed around. And I think as a team, mapping that and going, right, who are the five key clients that we need to tackle in the next 6 months, although it's not solving every fire, it's like these are the five that are really impacting our numbers, tag team on each one, and give the internal team the leadership support to have those more senior client relationship like discussions about it, that we found really helpful. I don't know if you've got the sheet, Andy, but
I can produce it in seconds. Basically, there's two axes in there. One is the potential for a client to grow, and the value of the client to your business. And what you ideally want is highly valuable clients that still have potential to grow. They're the ones that you should be thinking about. The ones with no potential for growth, which you're not making any money on, you know, you either have to move them up, which is either up in those boxes and change that relationship, or get rid of them. That's the up and out component of that. So do they have potential for growth, and are they profitable? And you can see how that might fit into four boxes, and you can plot your clients quite easily into there. And it also makes the point, which is, the effort you put into addressing over-servicing, put it into the ones where you're going to get the most return as well. So it's a really good point about that exercise, Abby. Thank you. Not all clients are created equal.
I wouldn't just ditch an unprofitable client, because you'd actually try and move them into profitability, wouldn't you? So
yeah, exactly. So up or out means you move them up, which is sort of in terms of your profitability, or in terms of their growth potential. So for example, you might sell them more services. You might be, it's a PPC client, and you could sell them SEO, you could sell them Crow, you could sell them programmatic, whatever. You know, are there other things you can sell them and make profit on? You definitely don't just phone them up and go, I'll send you the chart, but basically you're out, bud. Perhaps not. Although, how immensely satisfying might that be? I think typically the way to get rid of those clients is just put your prices up. At what point would I be comfortable dealing with this client, and that, you know, they move along the axis themselves if they're prepared to do that?
Or move your servicing down.
Well, the trouble if you move your servicing down is you potentially damage your reputation, which is, there's a fair point. But ideally, don't just phone them up and go, we're putting the prices up, or you're out. But I have done that. I have done both of those things. So anyone else got anything they're doing that helps them actually have those conversations? Because I think the nub of this is having the conversation in the right way at the right time with clients, particularly existing clients. Has anyone got a successful strategy for that, or that sometimes works, but you can't bring yourself to do all the time?
I think that one thing that helps me previously at the last agency was that in the scope setting out stage, when you're winning your pitch, is putting it in place right there and then, that 6 months later, you're going to have a regroup and go through the last 6 months and reassess the commercial terms if it needs to. So at that very first stage, it's in their mindset. Sorry, my video keeps turning off. But they know that's what to expect. So on both parts, you know, maybe they're overpaying, maybe they're underpaying, whatever it might be. But setting those original boundaries when you win a piece of business, you know, we're getting 6 months to get to know each other. In 6 months' time, let's reassess. And if we need to talk about commercials then to rebalance it, then that's when we'll do it then. I think that's a really important part to it.
And doing it.
Yes, exactly.
I think the key is you get into that kind of, just get into a rhythm of working together, and you don't feel you necessarily need it. But if you had it scheduled in for 6 months, have it, even if you just go, it's working really well, everything's great. there's always Perfect. Something, you know, yeah, it's just a check-in then, isn't it? And, you know, what's working, what's not, what can we do more of, what can we change? Some basic stuff, even if all of you agree everything's working, something will be in there, and it's about getting into the habit of doing it, I think. And I think more often than 6 months, even.
Where you came, when you discussed as well around the timesheets sort of part of it, and how you're managing and recording your profitability, that sort of data is so important for those sort of meetings, because you can show them on paper, actually, the over-servicing has cost us 20K in the last quarter. Using data like that really helps the conversation, I found.
I had a conversation with a very big charity, let's call them Macmillan as a code name, and they were a very, very complex client with a lot of stakeholders. And we did the sums on it, and it transpired that we were spending two and a half times as much time on the client as we were charging them. So only over-servicing them by 250%. And the client was complaining that certain stakeholders didn't feel they were getting the support from the agency they needed, and no one could understand. We couldn't understand why, and they felt they weren't getting the service. The only thing we could do is have the conversation, and we put it on a chart and we showed them what was happening. And actually what was happening to that client was that the big set piece activity for that client was getting all the attention it needed, but some of the tiny clients that were spending, you know, almost nothing a year still have the same right and the same access and could demand the same attention as everybody else. And what we did with that client was we changed the, I think, were you working on that, Joe? Probably you were. Yeah, I mean, we changed the SLA and said, basically, this, you know, we tiered the clients, the internal clients, and said, this is the service level agreement for each tier. And then those guys, and that was agreed with the client, and the client's internal stakeholders couldn't then complain because that had been set up with the client. But that took a pretty monumental meeting where we decided to put it on a huge chart on the wall and went, this is what you're paying, this is what we're doing, we need to have a proper conversation. And that client went on and stayed with the business for at least another couple of years, to my knowledge. So, you know, it can be done. I think we've run out of time. I'm sorry, way too much Andy and not enough of you again. Has anyone got any questions they wanted to just chuck in, anything that was burning?
I would just say one thing that you said, Andy, is have the conversation. I mean, you always have to keep talking to people. Otherwise, you slip into over-servicing a client. But if you keep up the conversation, then these things shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the point's been alluded to, but even if you're communicating, not necessarily charging, but at the very least communicating the value that you're giving is a kind of a pragmatic sort of first step to, you might end up paying something in the end, but, you know, as a kind of, this is what we've delivered, you know, we won't charge you this time, but in the future we will. You know, I think that's a kind of a good point to strive for initially. I know we're out of time, but the other thing as well is just on the time tracking. And I think the point around, I think our tendency is to sort of communicate time analysis to sort of senior, you know, the management team, and that's enough, and then hope that sort of trickles down. I think being completely transparent with the whole team and going, well, look, this is kind of, you know, you've spent X amount of time, and really presenting it even to the junior members of the team, I think that transparency can really, really help, because actually they kind of step back and suddenly think twice when they're about to hit send or whatever it is, or execute whatever it is they're doing for a particular client. I think our challenge there is finding a tool that really does that. The tool we use at the moment is far from adequate. So we'd love to hear.
Well, we get dragged into the vortex of timesheets then.
I know.
Which is always worth doing. So it's the next conversation. Boring.
But it's, you know, having that sort of segmentation on client servicing, reporting, you know, whatever it is, you know, we have something quite broad brush at the moment. So again, we'd love to hear if anyone has something amazing, please let me know what it is, because we are certainly struggling on that front.
So I think it's a really important, interesting point you just said around the transparency to junior teams, because previously, I've done it both ways, and the fact there wasn't enough transparency. Basically, you know, you sell in a piece of work, but you never actually tell the delivery teams what are the parameters of what they're meant to deliver. And then I think we over-rectified it, though, and we went really granular. And as a result, junior teams who aren't experienced enough to have those conversations with clients were using that data against us as an agency, saying, I'm working too hard on this. I'm going to say no to the client. And they don't know how to have those conversations. So we went far too far and had to sort of rectify ourselves again and make sure that sort of middle management level yeah. are the ones that have the information, because it tends to be junior people in my experience. They don't know what to do with that information. And they think I'm working too hard, which isn't the right attitude to have, obviously.
But and again, that comes, that's a great point, Martha. It's about layers of training, isn't it? What's the appropriate training for someone who's new into client services, any client facing role, that what do they need to understand about how a business actually works? Because you don't want them going, well, no, I didn't do it because I've maxed out my hours and you've told me I should only allocate 8 hours a month to that client, so I stopped. But equally, you do want them to be aware that that's, you know, how we put costs together and how we service our clients is about managing resourcing. And that when they come to you and go, well, we need to hire a new member of the team because we're busy. Well, if you don't fill your bloody timesheets in, we don't really know how busy you are. We certainly don't know how effective you're being. So we don't know if you need more staff. I'll happily get you more staff if you're genuinely maxed out on billable time. If you're not, what do I do? So there's levels of training and levels of understanding is a really good point. But the principle that Joe talked about, which is sharing more information in the team, sharing more understanding, I think is critical. It's really important.